Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
769 COVID cases notified yesterday, a 9% week-on-week increase in the number of cases, and warnings of a real danger that another surge could be imminent. But mandatory hotel quarantine is to be enforced by the end of this week, and government's discussions on the possible easing of some restrictions from April the 5th are to begin in the coming days. We'll be discussing where this all leaves us and what we can expect for the next few weeks in just a moment. But first, our reporter Brian O'Connell was out bright and early in Cork City Centre this morning to gauge the view of locals there about case numbers and how they feel about the current level of restrictions.
I think that people are probably tired of it at this point, but we leave it to the experts to decide.
There's some talk that maybe extending the 5 kilometres to 20 kilometres. Would that make much of a difference to you?
It would if we were allowed to meet family members. Currently we're not, so...
And you get the sense that patience is maybe wearing a bit thin?
Possibly, in particular among young people who seem to be populating on sunny days. You know, at this point you'd wonder how good the policies are in relation to restrictions.
When you think forward, say, 3 to 6 months, are you optimistic?
No.
People are getting sick and tired of it now, like, you know.
With the restrictions, do you think perhaps they should stay in place until the vaccines roll out a bit more?
No, I don't think so, no.
I
think we should get back to some normality, like, you know.
Do you think the restrictions should continue?
I suppose, I honestly don't know, but all I know is people are weary from the whole thing at this stage, you know, and something would have to be eased in travel or something like that, I reckon.
Do you think it's a case that we need to see more vaccinations before we can ease up?
Oh yeah, definitely. The vaccination needs to be very slow and very haphazard. If that was quicker, things could move on quicker, I think, myself, you know.
And the sense you're getting is patience is wearing a bit thin?
I say so with people. Like, it's very hard to keep people, in check, I suppose, after 12 months. Like, it's a long time, you know.
And in your case, if the 5K was increased, say, to 20K, would that make a difference?
In my case, it probably would. But maybe if building come back, like, I reckon they'd have to open up for the county.
Have you the summer holidays booked?
No, I'd probably stay local.
And, of course, cases high yesterday. I mean, that set people back a bit, hasn't it?
That's the strangest thing, that the cases are, for all the restrictions, the cases are still going up, like, you know.
So when you think forward, say, 3 months, are you optimistic?
I would be, surely. The vaccines would come in by then, like, you know, and that people, more and more people would be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So, therefore, I reckon that's the key to it, really, like, you know.
Brian O'Connell there out and about in Cork City Centre earlier this morning. Well, I'm joined now by Professor Sam McConkie, Head of the Department of International Health and Tropical Medicine at the RCSI, University of Medicine and Health Sciences. Good morning to you, Sam.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for joining us. You heard Brian O'Connell's vox there where he's speaking to people in Cork this morning, and there is a bit of, understandably, public fatigue.
Yeah, I suppose my analysis, Claire, of the bigger picture is that while we're had now 2 or 3 months of, you know, level 5 population restrictions, this hasn't led to as good a response as we had last April, May, June of 2020, nor even the low levels or lower levels of case that we had in November 2020. So we haven't seen the same effectiveness of these population level restrictions. And we are all getting tired of them, of course. And, you know, to live like this for a week or two, or even a few months, may be fine. But to do this for a whole year or two is very, very unpleasant, and none of us would be happy with that. Mm-hmm. So I think we're really in a very tight spot. We're stuck in the mud right now. And, you know, if we open up here, things will just, I think, unfortunately, get rapidly worse. So I feel we need to find another plan.
So what is the other plan?
There's two other plans that I come up with. One, of course, is massive vaccination, which, as we know, is limited by supply chain. I think ultimately between September and November of this year, of 2021, we will solve this problem, as the UK has, with very, very widespread vaccination. But I think, getting a bit of interruption here, but the in the shorter term, we all want to have a good summer. So we want to go on our holidays and get some travel, and our domestic facing tourist industry just about survived last year in 2020 through people being able to travel throughout Ireland and go to restaurants and pubs and bars that serve food. But if we don't get things a bit better, then our domestic facing tourist industry, which is very precious to the people who work in it and to all of us, you know, will really struggle just for survival. So I think the third way out of this, rather than population restrictions that we don't like, vaccine that is too slow, is a huge investment in population health and public health. And that involves, you know, several thousand staff to do local outbreak management teams. I seem to remember, I think we had this conversation on RTE Evening on Clareburn Live with Simon Coveney about a year ago approximately.
Yes,
and
yeah.
We talked about how I benchmarked against Wuhan. There's 5,000 trained contact tracers in Wuhan. We're only half the population, so maybe we need 2,500 trained epidemiology contact tracing outbreak management teams. We haven't scaled up to anything like that level, and now we're still struggling with it. So I see a huge investment in public health, not just staff, but also IT systems, also processes and governance. So we have, just as we have a cancer clinical program, why can't we have a population health clinical program in Ireland? Why can't we have an integrated, structured executive team that do population health all over Ireland, using private sector IT and using, you know, volunteers who want to help with childcare and providing for people who are in restrictions. So I think that's one area we could improve. I think also there's a role for employers in access to GPs, access to their staff getting paid if they're sick. Housing is sometimes very crowded for some people, that are moving around the country. So I think there's a role for employers to help fix their industry so we're not seeing these outbreaks in industry. So I think there's a lot we could do better and, you know, should have done maybe a year ago.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, in the context of lifting restrictions and saving the summer, is it almost too late to talk about investment in public health to the extent that you would like to see it happening?
I think it's not. I think there's a lot of folk out there, you know, who are unemployed and with some few weeks of training could do some of the work. So I think we need excessive staff available in public health to help the current staff to do what they're struggling with. So I don't see it as too late, no.
OK, and you mentioned the vaccine rollout as well. You think that that's not going to reach any critical mass until the autumn, September to November, you mentioned.
Well, as we've all learned, the supply chain of vaccines is very unpredictable. And even when we thought we contracted, they haven't been fulfilled. So I think we have to be cautious and not placing false hopes in a huge surge of vaccine deliveries until we actually see them with our own eyes on our own island. We've learned that, you know, there's a supply chain problem worldwide. Everyone's looking for them. There's 8 billion people in the world all looking for them. So it's hard to make 8 billion doses of anything in a few months. So I think it will take a little while. I'm hoping that when you have 3 new vaccines from China, there's a Sputnik 5 from Russia, which I think is very good. There's 3 made in India. There's Novavax. There's several new entrants to this market. And when it goes from 3 to 12, then the problem will sort of solve itself. But when there's 12 products, I think we'll be able to vaccinate the vast majority of people and that will control. But I just don't think that will happen in June or be finished by June. I think it's more likely September to November.
Now, the quarantine system due to start by the end of this week, at least people will be able to book their quarantine spot by then. But there's only 33 countries currently on the list, Professor McConkie. Should it be more? Should it be all countries? Should it be arrivals from all countries into Ireland?
So at this point right now, Claire, it's not actually imported cases that are our main problem. It's domestic transmission. So I'm hoping that our numbers will get down to double digits and then importations become very, very important. So I would have liked to have seen this in place, you know, last May, June, July, because then we might have averted our second wave and our third wave. So it's important that this infrastructure is there and we've got the legislation in place and the contracts and the businesses in place ready to do this. But I don't see that quarantine is the big issue right now. It's one part of the jigsaw, but one of 20 pieces rather than the main piece at this point.
So you're not concerned that it's just 33 countries, and some of those countries you'd have minimal arrivals from. The Philip Ryan in the Irish Independent is writing today, you know, about Botswana and Angola being on the list, but countries in Europe where cases are very high, not on that list.
So it is the case that many European countries, particularly Southern Europe, are seeing dramatic increases in cases in the last few weeks. And this may well be when the B.1.1.7 variant is spreading throughout, you know, Germany, France, Italy, Spain. And they're actually going up in numbers, whereas, you know, we for the last 2 or 3 months have been coming down despite having a lot of the B.1.1.7 here. So there could well be, I suppose we would call it a fourth wave that our European
partners are facing. And I do think we need to try and prevent reimportation of additional cases from the countries where it's transmitting a lot. That's kind of a dynamic, fluid situation that's constantly changing. And I think the Department of Transport has got that ability to revise the countries quite rapidly and quickly. So the legislation is now in place, and we could easily ramp up to more countries and change the countries as needed if that were necessary.
Okay, and then on the question of lifting some of the restrictions, going back to what we heard from Cork City, people are tired, they're looking forward to something happening maybe on the 5th of April. But then we see our cases at 769 last night. I mean, what would be your advice if you were looking at what should happen next?
So at a fairly straightforward analysis that I think everyone can realise, we learned in November and December that if we open up hospitality and multi-generational mixing in households, as we did in December, when we have 200 or 300 cases a day, then it very rapidly goes to 8,000 cases a day with, you know, hundreds of hospitalisations each day and a lot of deaths. And I don't think any of us are willing to have 1,000 extra deaths a month from COVID again, as we had in January and February. So we just, in my view, can't open things like hospitality and multi-generational visits at this point. Now, whether we could open something like outdoor construction with very safe workplace processes, as in fairness, the construction industry are very used to health and safety because, you know, 50 years ago, people used to fall down off building sites and die. Now they brought in proper harnesses and procedures that prevent that. So it is an industry that is used to implementing effective health and safety, and at least for outdoor sites with really good distancing at work, potentially that could open. But I think we have to be very cautious about anything that's going to increase the numbers, like multi-generational mixing.
Yes, and then if you open something like construction, and if there is a lift in cases, are you putting the schools at risk?
Well, I think the individual construction sites would need some sort of monitoring, and if there is an outbreak, then that site would have to close. And the same with schools, ways of detecting outbreaks, rather than having big outbreaks of 30 or 40 people detected, have very sensitive detection mechanisms, things like tracing everyone back for 14 days, mapping everywhere, you know, I've been for the previous 14 days if I've got COVID, and then using information, geocoding systems to put that on a map and match against all the places that other people with COVID have been, and then to find out locations of possible outbreaks at a very early stage. So that's where the huge investment in population health would really help us, with good IT, geocoding, mapping and outbreak detection systems. So those outbreaks could be caught when there's only one or two people that are found, rather than waiting till there's larger numbers of 30 or 50.
And that goes back to your point again about investing in public health and chasing down each and every outbreak. Professor Sam McConkie, thank you as always for joining us. Orla Hegarty is with us now, an architect and assistant professor at the School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy at UCD. Good morning, Orla.
Good morning.
You've been monitoring the hotel quarantine systems in Australia and in New Zealand. We're about to do it here. What can we learn?
Well, we can learn a lot. And in fact, just to follow on from the earlier conversation there, I think we need to turn this debate and our understanding of the disease a little bit on its head. A lot of the discussion that's gone on there is about a trial and error approach, whereby you open one sector or you release some restrictions and you see what happens. We don't need to do that anymore. We understand how this disease is transmitting, and we understand the hotspots, and we understand how it can be suppressed. And if this message can get out, I think a prevention plan could be far more effective than allowing thousands of people to become infected and then doing some track and trace to go backwards. We know what the risk areas are. And the quarantine hotel situations in Australia and New Zealand have really confirmed a lot of the scientific understanding, because there is no community spread in those countries. So when there is an outbreak or a leak from a quarantine hotel, it can be tracked very specifically, both by the variant that has spread and by the people who have become infected, in a very forensic way. And it is very clear from the studies now and from what's happened in the breaches in Australia, that it's not direct contact. Guards have been infected where they had no contact, and it's monitored on CCTV, and it's not from surface contact, because they have ruled that out in some cases. It is airborne, and it is a close up. Obviously, people are at higher risk, but in sealed environments, like somewhere like a hotel corridor where there isn't adequate ventilation, the virus can leak from a hotel room. It can linger in the air for hours, and a guard or somebody from the catering staff can become infected in the corridor. So when we pick up the clues from that, we can see also more broadly what's happening here in vehicles and in workplaces and in family homes.
So then, ventilation, if ventilation is the key, Sam McConkie's point about construction, if it's done safely, are you saying, are you in agreement with him that perhaps construction could reopen?
My view is that every sector could be opened at low risk, but not on the basis of some of the existing guidance and rules that are in place. The construction sector has rules that need to be upgraded now to our understanding of the disease. Many of the sectors are working off the understanding of the disease that we had in March 2020, which was about hand washing and hand hygiene and coughs and sneezes. We now know that more than half of the cases are from people who are not showing symptoms, so they're not coughing and sneezing. We know that the risk from surfaces is relatively low, and the risk outdoors is low unless you're in close proximity. So whereas the development of the vaccine strategy has come a very long way in a year, the development of prevention strategies really hasn't, and we haven't moved forward. So rather than having thousands more people involved in tracking and tracing, I think we need to be actively preventing disease, and that means buildings effectively, because it's the enclosed environments where the pandemic is spreading. It means informing people about how it's spreading within households and putting in protections in place to stop whole households becoming infected, to explain to people who are travelling to construction sites in vans or sharing bedrooms the preventions that they can take, so that isn't in place at the moment. So whereas the actual standing out on a construction site might be relatively safe, the real issue is that when construction is open, people are travelling long distances, they're sharing vans, they're sharing bedrooms, they're queuing in shops, they're sitting in site huts in the rain, and that's where the risk factor is. So the key thing here is a strong public health message about prevention, so that when people do go back to work or are in those situations, that they know the simple measures to take about ventilation and wearing masks.
And then coming back to the mandatory hotel quarantine, you have concerns about some of the hotels in this group that has been selected. They're in the city centre, and your concerns centre around whether the windows can open.
Well, in Australia, one of the things they have learned from some of the breaches is that city centre locations are higher risk for a number of reasons. Often there are sealed windows because of traffic noise, and so you have a sealed box effectively in terms of ventilation where people can't open the windows, and opening the windows, particularly in our climate, is the best way to ventilate. There's also a risk in those locations where you have cleaning and catering and security staff in cities often tend to be low-paid people who may be living in overcrowded accommodation or doing a second job or taking public transport, so that if there is a breach and some member of staff, they can actually spread very quickly, whereas if you're in a more rural location or not in a city, you're more likely that the staff maybe will be, you know, not putting themselves in high-risk situations for the rest of the day, so that a breach might be contained more easily.
I wanted to ask you about something we heard about over the weekend. Students and teachers at Leaving Cert level been directed not to wear masks during the Leaving Cert oral exams because the reason given was they could interfere with proper and clear communication. Do you think that's a wise decision?
I think, again, it goes back to the advice about prevention. Perspex screen does very little protection. It really just protects you up close from a sneeze or a cough. It doesn't protect you from virus being in the air, which is a little bit like cigarette smoke, so it moves around. I've personally been involved in organising a lot of oral examinations over the last year, and I certainly wouldn't have considered having people in the same room, because the technology is very widely available now to do this remotely, and the nature of an exam where it's a conversation isn't really, you know, cheating isn't really a risk in that situation.
So never mind masks, you wouldn't even have them in the same room.
I don't think anybody should be in a room with somebody else without a mask at the moment, unless it's their own home.
Okay, Orla Hegarty, architect and assistant professor at the School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy at UCD. And we go now to Anne Pickett, who is president of the Association of Secondary Teachers of Ireland. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Claire.
You've been listening there to what Orla said about the oral examinations.
Yes.
The advice is not to wear masks, but Orla is saying don't even be in the same room.
Yeah, I mean, I found Orla's contribution there very interesting and even more frightening than what we thought the situation was. Originally, we had proposed that these orals could be done perhaps on a computer, and schools were suggesting that a room could be available, a computer set up in the school, and the students could go in and out, so there wouldn't be cheating. The school would identify who the student was. I did find that very frightening, where she spoke about the airborne nature of the virus and the screens not protecting people. And we have been contacted by several people over the weekend who are very worried about going into a room to do these orals,
Now, people are volunteering to do this, and if they feel their health and safety is being compromised, it might be hard for principals to find enough people to carry out this work. Now, we are also being told by language teachers that there might be a certain type of mask which wouldn't muffle the sound. And I think that's where this might have to go. And we will engage with the department on this issue.
OK. And then the other issue that you're facing as well, looking at more classes coming back now after Easter at secondary level, but the case numbers are rising. What are your concerns around that?
Yeah, we are concerned about rising numbers. And on Friday, the 26th of February, the number was 776. It dipped down very, very slowly, and it went down to the lowest of 311, but never went lower than that. And unfortunately, last night, it's back up to 769. Now, that is quite high. And at the moment, we have phased reopening. So we have the Leaving Certs back for 2 weeks on their own. And then the fifth years just went back after that on the 15th. I think the whole idea of the phased reopening was to monitor the situation and monitor the numbers. And we do get weekly reports and weekly numbers. And the report that covers the 7th to the 13th of March has stated that there were 7 cases in post-primary schools. And yet at the same time, the same numbers tell us that in the age bracket of 13 to 18-year-olds in the country, there were 316 cases. So that's quite a difference.
But most 13 to 18-year-olds wouldn't be back at school, surely?
No, they wouldn't be back. So when they do come back, that's when it will become a bigger problem. Yeah, but I think the way the reporting has always been an issue in that the number of cases in schools has always been far lower than the corresponding age numbers that are recorded nationally. So we are also keeping an eye on those and also continue to worry for our members.
Is there any doubt that remaining secondary schools will be back after Easter, would you say?
Well, I don't know. I mean, nobody expected that huge surge of numbers over Christmas up to the point where students couldn't go back and teachers couldn't go back. We would hope that the same wouldn't happen, but we keep hearing about a fourth wave, a surge coming, and we know because of the variants, everything is far more transmissible. And then there are other variants, such as the Nigerian one, that we don't hear much about. Now, I do know public health are keeping a very close and strong eye on all of those, but it is very frightening for people in the school system.
And then the teachers who are at risk, considered to be at risk, they're expected back in after Easter as well.
Yes, so our very high-risk teachers, and in those cases they have very severe ailments, have been working remotely since September. Since the phased reopening started, the high-risk teachers in those categories were allowed to stay at home and work remotely, so they could work remotely with their exam classes. Now, however, after Easter, they will have to come back when everybody else comes back. And again, they're quite worried for their situation. And in particular, we're keeping an eye on the situation in relation to pregnant teachers.
OK, and we'll leave it there for now. Anne Pickett
Thank
from
you.
The ASTI there. Coming up after the break, is the white water rafting dream for Dublin dead in the water?
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.